The heart of every thriving business are people who feel seen, valued, and included. And in this episode, I speak with Kate O'Brien and Andy O'Connor, founders of Equally Placed, the Highland-based recruitment agency, redefining how inclusion really works. And their mission is simple: to make hiring human again. Welcome to another Growth for Good podcast with me, Drew Hendry. I'm delighted to be joined by Andy O'Connor and Kate O'Brien from Equally Placed. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you very much.
And thanks for joining us today. So tell me about your story. What is the background to Kate and to Andy?
I went to university. I did a business studies degree. And when I did my business studies degree, I specialised in HR. And beyond that, I was really passionate about women's rights, obviously, and there was a lot of information about the glass ceiling and how we can't really break through it. So that's what I did my dissertation on, and I based it purely around the chefs in the hospitality industry. So female chefs, where I interviewed them, and that really took my sort of passion a little bit further. I went into recruitment, I headhunted, worked for some public sector industries and also some private sector industries too. And beyond that, I left because I thought, oh, it's a bit like hard work, you know. I did my own thing for a while and then I got back into it because it was just the natural thing for me to go back into something that I actually loved and knew about. And worked more on the advertising side of things for recruitment. But this was before lockdown, and people, clients of mine, had started asking me where could they find a more diverse range of talent to choose from, or to be assisted with, you know, to sort of help their EDI agendas. Mm-hmm. And at that point, there wasn't really anything. There was kind of a few bits and pieces, one really expensive way to do it, and a couple of like token gestures, you know, that just had this. The title.
How did you meet Kate?
So,
because your partner's not just
yes.
the business,
yeah,
but your life partner's
yes.
Funny story, and similar background to Kate, having left the area to come back. I'd spent a lot of my career in recruitment in this area. And coming back to it now is like life's gone 360, Drew. You know, having been away and done my own thing, but it's something that's been fueled by my own experiences in my career. And when obviously I met Kate, my now partner and life partner, I got to find out a bit more about Equally Placed, which was already running, and resonated with the message that Kate was trying to get out there. So I wanted
to get behind it. Did you kind of spark off each other in terms of the enthusiasm and the idea of it? So what does Equally Placed mean to you? And tell us a bit about what's behind it. What inspired it, and what has it become?
Well, like I mentioned, it was purely driven, I suppose, by a bit sedentary work going through COVID. It gave me a bit of a chance to think about those clients who had asked me about where can I find these people or how can I do more. And I started thinking about it then, and I, you know, got the name in place, got the website started, and just took it from there, really. Mm-hmm. I did have a break when I moved north again because I really wanted to move back home to the Highlands. So that's
where were you living at the time?
I was living in Harrogate.
In Harrogate?
Yes. Yeah. I think the city thing for me at that point, you know, it was time to move home.
I was drawn back
into the Highlands, and that's when...
Yeah, it's the same for me. I've been in Aberdeen working for some businesses within the building industry, and having left it and met Kate at the time and decided to move back home, it was very much coming away from that hustle and bustle to a more relaxed part of the world, which is where we,
But this is a different type of... I mean, I can see you wanting to make the change, come back to the Highlands and so forth, but this is a very different type of business in terms of recruitment, isn't it? So what was the moment that caught you, or the event, or what was the inspiration that made you say, Equally Placed, that's the kind of business we want to start?
I think for me in the north and always having that you know in part of me and sort of the connections that I've built up over time, I regularly see the growth profile of all sectors in the north. You know, the energy sector for example, you know, the Greenport, whom we've spoken to at length about the opportunity.
This is the Inverness and Cromarty for Freeport.
And that's just one, you know, in a part of the world where there aren't many of us, you know. It's how do you meet the demand of all of these projects? And then that sort of spiraled down the, well, what else is there? Who else needs help? How can we make the Highlands inclusive to everybody, you know, and tell that story? Yeah. So that for me sparked the Ugly Place.
And Kate, that was already important to you, as you were saying about the work you've been doing.
Particularly, we know a little bit more about this area, I guess, because we grew up here. Recruitment, I would say, has not really changed. It's not changed in 20 years, at least, that I've been, you know, working in or around it. So there needs to be something different done to actually make a positive impact and not kind of just almost regurgitating the same thing over and over again. I think things really need to be tailor-made to specific organisations and then in turn the candidates and the people that they attract.
Somebody in your past and your experience who's either been a mentor to you or given you inspiration or somebody who's been a great supporter of what you do?
Yeah, I mean, when I first started talking about this, Stephen Kirkpatrick, he was the sort of CEO of Adecco, but the Jonathan Wren side of things, which was an executive search arm, and we've stayed in touch for the past 15 years since I moved on, and I sort of soundboarded everything off of him, and he's been really supportive and sort of given me guidance in the background, you know, about what he would do, how he would go about it. He's still in the sort of industry anyway, but he very much takes on more of a kind of mentorship role now. So he's been fabulous.
It's a really important facet of the Growth for Good collective that we've got, that there are people there to help and mentor and give advice. So, so that's been really useful to you, I take it.
He's incredible. I liked him anyway, you know, when we were at work together. But he's based in Ireland actually now. So, but yeah, we stay in touch via Team, Zoom, you know, all that kind of stuff. So he's been fabulous. Really good help.
Yes.
We've talked there about mentorship and the help that you've had, but obviously Equally Placed is about making sure that you're helping to have a more inclusive and diverse workforce, and to make sure that skills are seen as the primary objective. How do you set up to address that challenge of making sure that skills are the most important thing, and making sure that Equally Placed provides something different in the market?
Well, shall I go? So basically, with the website and how it's set up itself, we have specific tags relating to specific skill sets and specific groups, and they are all attached to each and every individual job post and also the companies. So people can go on and actually look for what they want from a company, and likewise for the companies with the humans at the other end, you know. And when they register their CVs, they don't need to put their age, their, you know, name even, their date of birth, nothing needs to go on there apart from their skill set. So really that could be measured against anybody looking for a CV search. So that's something that we find is quite important, especially in that blind recruitment campaign. It takes away all the bias really from that, because up here, generational diversity is a big thing. And I think a lot of people get overlooked once they hit a certain age bracket, personally. And I think this just makes everything a little bit more compact and neater, so that you can just be judged on what you've done in the past alone.
Do you find getting that concept across to employers as a challenge, or has it been well received, or is it a wee bit of a barrier to overcome for you, that, you know, getting the concept across to people? What is the situation with that?
I think for me, the idea that we have is there. I think there's almost a retraining of the brain, isn't there, to people? They're used to a certain way. Well, that's not how we do it. Have you thought about this? And that change in mindset there's an educational piece there that we've got, and it is an uphill for us, Drew. So we've got our work cut out, but we believe in the message for change is needed around about business, about what it means to be an inclusive hire today.
And what are the benefits then for an employer? Because this is an opportunity for us to really get the concept across to people. So if I'm looking as a business, if I'm looking to recruit, and again I'm looking to fill those skills, sounds obvious when you start talking about it. But what's the benefit then to these companies? What are they going to get extra that they don't get with a traditional agency?
I think you're opening yourself up to a much wider demographic of people, the people side. And what that looks like, I think that's determined by what the messages are the companies are looking to get out there. You know,
recruitment's quite a challenging thing for any company just now, across the Highlands or anywhere else. We touched on earlier talking about the green freeports as big expansion of opportunity for people, but that means more competition for jobs. Yeah. Do you find that what the employers are getting is that they're actually opening up the opportunities to be able to fill those skills gaps that they're going to have because they're considering people that might not have classically fitted into the mold beforehand?
I do. I think that's the case. And like specifically at the moment, we're working with one particular person who has a really strong background in construction, but they've transitioned and they're now a man working in an environment that is necessarily not quite, you know, they don't feel completely comfortable with. So that's the type of thing that we need to break down. They can do the job, they can do it really well, but it's what other people perceive as what can be done within that environment for those people. So that's just one example, but, you know, to get the people out there to sell them personally, which is what we do, we don't just go to like pick things off of a total job CV search board and things like that and just fire things over. We actually get to know the people and we get to know them really well.
So you're confident when you're putting somebody forward?
Yes, so we're confident, definitely.
And that you've got somebody who's going to be able to fulfill the remit that's being sought.
And make sure that they keep up with their end of the bargain in terms of the organisations as well, because they've got to want a change to be made. And if they don't, then they're never going to use us, or they're never going to, you know, go down that route with us. So I think that's really important, isn't it?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
You've talked there about the ability for people to not only gain employment and get their skills back into the workplace, and the environments being, you're almost curated, and the skills being curated for the employer.
Yeah.
So there's a really nice mix there. Have you got an example of where you've been able to place somebody that's been a transformational situation for them, or a company that's been changed in the way they
do? Yeah, I mean, it's even just the other day, there was a young woman in London had sought me out to have a conversation around about her ADHD and how it's affected her herself at work, and so much so that she didn't feel safe and secure in her workplace, and she had to leave. And just having a conversation around about how that felt for her and what the next stage looked like for her in order to have that safety in the workplace was giving me affirmation that we were doing the right thing, Drew. You know, and you know, at the end, after that conversation, she wrote a lovely letter to me saying, you know, it was just refreshing to hear somebody having had experience in something similar.
Positive experience.
She's gone on to find a job in the arts industry, having been in recruitment of all things. So
life-changing.
Yeah, life-changing, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
And obviously that that company, the arts venue or whatever, has found somebody with the skills that they need.
Exactly, from a slightly different background necessarily to what they would have chosen
completely
in the first place. So,
So the way you're doing business in Equally Placed, you know, the landscape out there, the business landscape out there can be quite tough to change the mindset of people. You know, and it is complex and getting those trade-offs for people. What's the toughest challenge you've had and the biggest trade-off you've had to make in order to get Equally Placed underway?
I think for me, in terms of trying to get through to companies themselves, it's hard when they're big companies, like really big companies. They've all got their own EDI departments within their HR departments, so they kind of handle all of that stuff by themselves. So we can't ever really get through to them. The smaller companies, I suppose, the hard thing about that is they think, maybe why would they need it? So, you know, we've got to sort of have a happy medium. And a lot of the time, if they, we can put them on our site for free. It's a, you know, get them on there, see what we can do to help promote them, and then take it from there, really. So that's what we've been doing, offering free sort of, free subscriptions, yeah. I suppose.
So that's kind of been the trade-off.
That's the trade-off.
You've had to sacrifice some income in order to make sure that you're kind of getting through.
Because we're new, we're the new kids on the block. We're trying to be authentic in a market that's saturated with recruitment businesses, and trying to open doors. You know.
Is that a risk sometimes? Because by giving something away, you're kind of almost saying, you know, implicitly there's not value, but clearly there is a big value to this. Is that a bit of a risk, or is that the big trade-off that concerns you?
You think so, but for me personally, I honestly believe recruitment is massively overpriced. Mm-hmm. It's hugely overpriced.
I'm sure a lot of people watching and listening agreeing with you on that.
I think you know, a lot of the time people just, again, recruitment companies will just regurgitate the same old people to try and just get a placement or to try and get something in.
Would you describe it almost as, you know, the recruitment industry almost as a wee bit of a rat race?
It is a rat race. Like a motor track.
So it's just recycle, and go again. Whereas, you know, like you've said earlier, what you're trying to do is find people who are going to be the perfect fit for a company, even though, you know, in the first instance, they might not be considered because of that traditional model, that traditional expensive model. So just picking up on that then, so is your price positioning a real advantage to people who might be looking to use your services?
A lot of people really like how we positioned ourselves and, you know, I think we do offer more for probably a bit less, but there are only two people in this at the moment. So obviously, when we get to the point and we've got to start hiring other people, price point might change, but that's just economics.
But just
really.
Now you're really accessible.
We're really accessible.
For people. And, you know, it sounds to me that what you're saying is your mission is, you know, the primary thing in terms of delivering this. And whilst everybody's got to eat and you've got to grow your company and you want to scale and so forth, that's not the main concern, you know, about the income that you're making just now. But obviously, like any business, to scale, as you just said, you need to be able to do that. So that's the trade-off for you. Yeah. How have candidates described to you the experience? Because we're talking about this kind of curation experience we've heard about an example, but how do candidates describe the experience versus other more kind of established agencies that they've used?
Yeah, I think in the last one, that it was her words were refreshing. Mm-hmm. It was nice to not do the robotic, or not have the robotic approach, and almost have a script read to you about who you are, where you're from, what kind of job do you want.
She said it was the first time she's ever felt comfortable around people who were trying to help her find the next role, you know, which that's always a nice thing to hear. You're approachable, still professional, but you are approachable and seem eager and willing to actually help. You know, it's not just a token. I keep saying that, but it is very true.
Yeah, I mean, it's the person behind the CV that we want to get to, definitely. if I could do recruitment with just on my say-so alone, saying this is the person for you, I could, but it's not as simple as that. Mm. Yeah.
And how important is the CV process then in the way you get, because surely what you've got to also do is understand people's experience and so forth.
Yeah.
So how do you kind of bring those things together?
So for me, the whole lot's linked, Drew. It is, but we're just trying to make the human part of the recruitment process humanized, really. Mm-hmm. The experience, the where you've been, the what you've done. That's the work part. But there's also the huge, you know, we had this discussion last week with a local business about the culture within a business and whether that person's going to fit in with what's already there. You know, a CV tells you one thing, but you could end up spending a lot of money on a recruitment process that ultimately, the guy or girl or whoever, they just don't fit, you know. So it's finding that balance, finding that right balance.
I think we spend the time trying to understand the culture of
first,
the candidate and the companies that we work with. So it's quite a good marrying up situation.
Does that involve a lot of questions about the business, about the people that you're, obviously the people you're looking to place, but it's not perhaps as common, I would imagine, or indeed from my experience, for recruiters to say, the business, tell me about your specific needs, tell me about what you actually want to get out of this and what you want to achieve.
See, that's unusual that you say that, because that's something I always ask. Maybe I ask too many questions, but...
is there such a thing?
Yeah. but I do really like to understand what's going on, what they've been through in the past and what they expect to get out of the future as well, and how they need to make a change within their own environment. So, and how we can help facilitate the people that go into those companies at the same time. So I think the culture fit is definitely a big one, because people might not have necessarily the right or the right level of experience, but they can always be trained. And if they fit into the culture, then that's got to be, it's a win-win,
So you're taking a real interest in the company that's approached you to say, look, we need somebody for this position. So you were saying about asking too many questions, but it sounds to me as if what you're doing is just saying, look, you need to make sure we've asked all these questions to save them time in the long run by getting the right match before we even start. Because, it's easy to employ somebody. Mm-hmm. It's not easy to make sure they're going to stay.
Yes.
Or indeed you're going to want them to
stay. Yes, exactly. Yeah.
So we're in a fast-paced world just now with a lot of focus on things like artificial intelligence, technologies. What do you see in terms of technology or other innovations changing the way you do business over the next, say, 5 years?
I think when you talk about AI, artificial intelligence, I think there are now lots of programs that people can use in association with their recruitment processes, whether that be the advertising, the writing of the specs or anything like that. I think that will be a help, obviously, but I do think personally that side of innovation takes away a little bit more of the personal aspect to recruitment, or even not just recruitment, but the one-on-one with the business, the one-on-one with the candidate, it just removes that a little bit. So I don't think that side of innovation is going to necessarily bolster us as a little organisation, is it?
No.
But you use it.
I use it with my own challenges that I have every day to try and stay professional more than anything. Spell check myself more often.
I think you've got that in common with lots of people.
Further down the line, we are talking about a blind recruitment facility, which removes the unconscious bias within what we're trying to do. That's to be war roomed, I think.
Baby steps.
So the baby steps.
They're ideas.
Yeah.
And so that's the next 5 years.
Yeah.
We talked about, you know, growing the business at some point in the future, hopefully sooner rather than later.
Yeah.
How do you plan to maintain the ethical culture and the values that you've embedded and equally placed with people that are coming to join your business?
Well, I mean, for me, I think I'm quite a good judge of character. I know that's like a good phase. You get a good feeling for somebody and you can quite quickly see if somebody's values do align with yours enough to make a working environment successful. So it's in the kind of title, equally placed. I mean, we've just got to be in the middle and...
So you're going
to both sides.
You're going to use your own recruitment skills to make sure you're recruiting people that have got the same values.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's the first port of call.
Yeah, I think obviously it's a partnership that we have, but you know, spending the time that we're spending trying to find our tribe at the moment, Drew, we're starting to meet great people with similar values.
Is that empowering for you?
Absolutely.
Gives you a buzz.
Oh, yeah.
Something to be on your own podcast as well. and that's true. It's we're beginning.
All the people that come on this podcast are great for buzz of personalities.
Yeah, it's been great meeting a lot of people up here that have very similar aligned expectations and thoughts around business up here as well.
Certainly the messages that we're giving out, they're being well received. So if and when that happens down the line, I think that it would be a natural assumption for us to expect that we'll find the right blend somehow.
And so tell me, the you know, we're talking about scaling up and the future and so forth, and you've talked about recruiting and having that focus on the kind of people that you would want to include in your business going forwards. But what would be the value that you just wouldn't compromise on? What would be the thing that would be that's a line in the sand for you?
For me, I don't like people taking exception of other people without actually getting to know them.
So if you were faced by, for example, somebody othering, that would be a red line for you?
I'm just quite...
By othering, what I mean is obviously saying those people are different than being absolutely direct about that in a negative way.
Yeah. I don't like negativity. I'm like, I think if you react positively to things, or at least go in with an open mind towards situations, that's something that I never compromise on. Like, this was petrifying to me.
You can't tell.
But you had to give me a pep talk in the car, didn't you? It really, I think, go into things with an open mind, and it's either going to work or it's not going to work. And I think people need to give things a go. Yeah. And if they don't have that as one of their values, I don't think that would align very well with how I approach things personally.
Yeah.
And possibly you too.
Same, and it's the human part, it's the humanising us with others. The best bit of advice I've had throughout this whole journey so far has been from Sinéad, from The Human Differences. Tell your story, Andy, you know, because people will align with it, people will understand, and, you know, it doesn't always come out on the website who you are and what you're doing, but tell your story.
We need to work on that.
We need to work.
Well, that's what we're doing. That's what we're doing here today.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's a lot about the future, about the values that you've set, and we've talked about the kind of work you do in terms of the detail we put into making sure you've got a match, not just for companies, but planning that for yourself just now. How does the immediate to medium-term future look in terms of where you're looking to grow? What do you have any kind of like targets that you've set yourself? You don't have to tell us them. Have you built a business plan that you're following just now?
We can talk discussions at the moment. Mm-hmm. I think around about this area, third sector, hospitality. Those industries have struggled.
They're really struggling.
Yeah. Really struggling.
So not because they're not great industries to work in. You know, everybody here knows how good these industries are, and how good some of the third sector organisations and hospitality and tourism is, but it's just difficult to get people in there.
Yes. So those discussions, looking at the next year for their recruitment campaigns, I think they're listening about what's different, you know, because things haven't worked before. What will change in the new year as industries grow, as tourism's rife and ever popular where we live in the north. It's not going to change unless businesses change. I mean, there's a skill set discussion to be had versus quality candidate versus amount of people that live in the area.
I think that's also about trying to attract people to the area, without oversaturating the area with people, you know. So
and who and where they come from.
Yeah, exactly.
Is that's the inclusion part on working with these businesses to open doors to everybody of all backgrounds.
So, I mean, listening to what you've been saying to us so far, you can tell, I think anybody can tell watching, listening to this, that you're committed to this, that you know, this is something you think about an awful lot all of the day. But, you know, the fact that, you know, you're going out there and go, right, okay, you've got to do things differently and so forth, that's all consuming.
Yeah.
How do you separate that from getting some time for yourselves? What do? Do you have any strategies? Do you take any time for yourselves? How does that work?
Mine's easy. I go up to my friend's horses. I do. I have to.
So it's animals.
It's animals and countryside and just being outside for me, just taking that time to soak up in the atmosphere. Yeah, I just love that, honestly.
You switch off when you do that? Is that important as well?
Yeah, I can switch off quite easily, but then it's mostly when I'm asleep that it starts to consume my mind.
So you wake up at 2 in the morning, hold on, I'm going to write that down.
I know, exactly. So that is when it takes over my thoughts, when I'm, you know, properly asleep.
But it's important to have those boundaries, that escape time for you to go and do that, because I think it is something that's come up time and time again that, you know, that people do have to sometimes say, look, I need to set some time aside to do that. Otherwise, you can just burn out and lose the enthusiasm. Is it the same for you, Andy?
Yeah, absolutely. I've got interest in dogs and a daughter at the moment, which takes up a lot of my time, but good distractions.
So we've talked a lot about what you're doing, how you're set up, and the ethics and the approach you've taken about matching people together. But let me ask you, what's the legacy you hope you'll leave behind, either for individuals or for organisations or indeed for your own company? What's the legacy for you?
Well, for me personally, I think there's a lot of cutthroat in this type of industry. And what I would hope to leave is something that resembles a kind of approach to both sides, recruitment organisations and candidates. You know, they're not going to be left high and dry waiting or wondering. And it's the thoughtful kindness aspect behind our interaction and our relationships, really. That's what I would hope people remember, that it can be done differently. You know, recruitment
Is that similar for you, Andy?
I think so. I think from my experience in recruitment and the smoke and mirrors that comes with it, I think we're a bit more open in our approach. And I think if we can change anything, it would be to try and do that. Trying to change, not recruitment, I didn't have that huge a dent in it, but I think for us, and our
own... Well, who knows when you see
Who knows when you see
that, absolutely. I just think what's working, what's not working at the moment, certainly for me, is to try and change that for the better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, let me ask you then, for people watching and listening just now, if you had to leave them with one line or one memory from this discussion, what would that be?
Inclusion doesn't have to be perfect. It has to be genuine, is the impression that I would like to set here. I think things need to change. I think in terms of the message that we're trying to get out there, we're not perfect, but we've got good intentions to try and change things for the better.
And does it, you remind me of an old expression, which is don't let perfect be the enemy of good.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's very appropriate for good for growth to talk about that good thing you're doing. So, you know, so that message that you've said there, that's something you want to carry out. So if businesses, if people, if applicants wanted to support you in this journey, How would they do that? How do they get in touch with you? Where do they find you?
Well, they can find us at equallyplaced.com. Mm-hmm. There's a contact form to fill out for candidates. You can register your CV. You can register all of your details, what you're looking for, and we can get in contact with you after mm-hmm. that. For businesses, similar thing. You can go online and register all of your details and set up your own micro page, or we can handle that for you. Mm-hmm. And then take it from there, see how we can work together from both sides.
Yeah. And social medias that we have.
Social media.
And they're going to be interacting with you directly.
Yes.
So the people they're seeing on screen, they're listening to you now, are going to be the people involved in looking after what they're seeking
this
to
is
achieve.
Us. There's no hiding.
There's no hiding.
No, there isn't.
This is the dream team for Equally Placed. Equally Placed sounds like a fantastic venture. It sounds like a real gap in the market to me. Like I said, somebody who over a number of years have recruited people with a focus on skills. Mm-hmm. It is a breath of fresh air to hear that coming through. And I think there is a real interest that people have in watching and listening to this and hearing about your vision and venture going forward. So, Kate, can I thank you? Andy, can I thank you for coming along and telling us about Equally Placed?
Well, a big thank you again to Kate O'Brien and Andy O'Connor from Equally Placed for sharing their story and for reminding us that inclusion doesn't have to be perfect, it just has to be genuine. If you've enjoyed this conversation, please take a moment to follow, rate, and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. It really helps others to discover the show and join the conversation about how we can build a fairer, more sustainable economy together. You can also watch and share every episode on YouTube or find more stories like this at drewhendry.scot. Until next time, thanks for listening.